This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
Welcome back to Threshold Radio. This is author Kenneth Ead. I'm here with Johnny Bluestar, and we're discussing the Bill of Rights. And we're coming up on the Seventh Amendment, which I'll read it to you. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by jury shall otherwise be reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law.
Okay, could you explicate that, sir?
Yes, this what we were talking about before was a right to trial by jury. That's what the forefathers had in mind for anyone who was accused of a crime. Actually, you also have a right to jury in a civil trial. But that's not how it's happened in criminal law right now. We have about 97 to 98% of all federal cases never get to jury trial. One, the prosecutor is too powerful. Two, they hang over a punishment over your head that's outrageous and offer you something that's palatable but still bad as a plea bargain. And three, people can't afford to defend themselves all the way to jury trial. It costs several hundred thousand dollars. So it's a nice thing to think about that, you know, you would have a right to be tried by a jury of your peers on every criminal case that you're accused of. But it doesn't happen in this country anymore.
Yeah.
Very rarely.
And it strikes me that it's to a great extent an economic situation, economic
it's
blackmail.
It's an economic blackmail. And what happens is you're accused of a crime. You're arrested and you're thrown into jail. If you can afford an attorney, your attorney can't really prepare for you because he can't really meet you except in jail unless you get on bail, and they can raise the bail so high that you can't do it, which is another constitutional right for a reasonable bail. Well, most people, unless they have people to co-sign and can put up a bunch of property and pay a huge bail bond, they can't get out on bail. So it's an economic situation. So you have a right to trial by jury if you can afford it, is what the right is now.
How do people interpret the exceed $20? I mean, do they look at what that would be worth now? I mean,
Well, in federal cases, you can't even file a federal lawsuit unless your controversy exceeds $50,000. So I suppose if we took the $20 and the value of $20, it might be up there. not a $50,000.
Whoa.
But obviously, the federal courts have never extended diversity jurisdiction to, which is cases of people from different states suing each other. They've never extended to that low at all in our history. So, and I made a mistake, it's $75,000 now. It used to be 50, now it's 75. It goes up. Inflation, you know. So, no, the $20 also doesn't apply either. So if the amount in controversy is $20 plus $74,980, then you can get into federal court and then you can ask for a jury trial.
So would you say that this amendment has kind of been distorted by emerging traditions?
It's been diluted. It's been diluted by the people in power, like a lot of our amendments, and especially the Fourth Amendment. Anything that relates to criminal law has been diluted by the courts, so much so that we hardly recognize the constitutional guarantee that used to be there.
How do you feel as a someone who's practiced law for quite some time about the prices that are charged by attorneys?
Well, I think that normal people can't afford the prices. By the same token, the amount of work that goes into it justifies a several hundred dollar per hour fee. And the reason why is there's just so much that goes into it. First of all, just getting a handle on a case requires a ton of research, where you've got different federal authorities, state authorities. There's 50 states you may have to look at. All those hours and hours of work can add up to a huge fee, but you can't do it. Without having that type of fee, because the time has to go in.
Well, so if the time is going in at $200 an hour, mm-hmm. and this person is making $10 an hour,
it doesn't work. It doesn't compute.
It just seems like that type of pricing is. I'm not sure who I would say is responsible, but what it. I mean, I just work with some people. In a law firm, and with my a relative was involved, and if we called in for 5 minutes, they charge us $20 or $30.
Oh, really? Usually, attorneys. Well, big firms are different. Big firms have a huge bureaucracy to support, a huge staff, a big fancy office, coffee cups with their names on it. I never was a member of a big firm, so I don't know how all that works, but I know that they pay for all that. And I don't know if they charge for initial consultation, but I never did. I always had a one-man firm, and for me, just talking to someone to figure out if they had a case or not, it was good for them and it was good for me, because I got to, potentially get a client.
Yeah.
And they got to have their question answered for free. So it worked out both ways. It's like, kind of like a loss leader, where you go into the office supply store and you get to buy the ream of copy paper at cost. It gets you into the store. So it works both ways.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good practice. I don't think charging for a 5 minute call is fair at all. I mean, you don't even get to know the lawyer.
Well, I was thinking you probably missed having that coffee cup with your name on it, though. Although,
oh yeah,
I mean, if you had one in your in an office by yourself, you just look at it. But if you had it, have it with other people, they can always see your coffee cup.
Yeah, and pens with your name on it, those are pretty cool too.
Yeah. What about the Eighth Amendment?
The Eighth Amendment is something we talked about in our show regarding the Patriots Act, the book that I wrote. Excessive bail, which is what we just talked about, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Well, we pretty much killed this one, haven't we, John?
Well, I have a question here.
Mm-hmm.
Is this, when it says cruel and unusual punishment, is it talking about as punishment for a crime?
It's talking about any kind of punishment when you're in custody. So yes, it's mainly talking about punishment for a crime, and this amendment is the one in issue whenever we're talking about the death penalty, which has always been in controversy in California.
Right.
It's always up for grabs in California, and it's still, the jury's still out on death penalty in California. There's always litigation going on that.
Yeah, but what about the, a situation where they're in custody, but it's not a question of being sentenced?
Well, the amendment still applies to someone who's in custody who's being tortured, if that's what you're trying to get at. It applies to that, because it applies to the, let's say, the people in Guantanamo have been there for 14 years. And they haven't been convicted of any crime. So they can't be punished for a crime, can they? But they're still being punished. So it forbids any type of punishment, whether they've been convicted or not.
It's pretty amazing that this kind of demand that there's humane treatment for people, and that there have been also various international treaties and so forth. And, of course, the Nuremberg. Well,
the Geneva Conventions. Geneva Conventions of 1949 prohibits torture. But torture was officially sanctioned at the highest form of government during the Bush administration. And it was business as usual, continuing with Obama. In 2002, Bush signed a finding, not a presidential order, but a finding saying that anybody who is suspected of being Al-Qaeda or Taliban or enemy combatants. And he created a whole new class of people that, are treated, determine whether or not the Constitution applies to them. So he said that the Geneva Convention itself didn't apply to these enemy combatants.
I recall.
Yeah, so the idea was they could operate these black sites, they could do whatever they wanted to, and they wouldn't be violating the Geneva Convention because these are not prisoners of war, which is ridiculous. Of course they're prisoners of war. You just don't call it a war.
It's just the idea of all men being created equal and having inalienable rights and just totally not. What bothers me is how could they want this? How could anybody really want to do this? I mean, obviously they've done it in spades, but I mean, it's just, it's hard for me to get into their heads.
Well, if you want to have an illegal war, if you want to have an illegal war and you want to go to Iraq and say that you're fighting against terrorists, you got to have terrorists, don't you?
Yeah,
there's got to be terrorists there. So if you hire a mercenary to go, a force of mercenaries to go out there and offer a bounty for capturing terrorists, they'll just get whoever they can, say, here's your terrorists. And the idea was, we're never going to find out. We got the terrorists. We don't have to find out if they're really terrorists or not, because what we want to do is we want to continue with this war. We want to get brownie points at home. So we're going to set up our own court system that has nothing to do with the U.S. court system. We're going to try and execute these guys off-site so that there's no scrutiny involved at all. And that way you could have your own war wherever you want it. And you can always say it's about terrorism.
Well, right now we're going to take a break, Ken, and we'll be right back. Here is a song by Zave Nathan and his wife, Bonnie Blazak, which documents their own experience of not realizing the terrible reality facing all of us who love America and the sense of justice and liberty supposed to lie behind the American experience. The song is called Living in the Closet.
We're living in the closet, There's a light surrounding me. It's time for us to finally see the dawning of a brand new day. 'Cause the old world has gone away. Down with our heads in the sand. It's time for us to take a stand. Stop living in the closet. We're living in the closet. We're living in the closet. We're living in the closet.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who was a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of this stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was 6. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy. We ditch the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
Nowadays, if you are a serious business person, just getting assistance from someone with a license and a bit of experience may not be sufficient. In fact, your realtor actually needs to be knowledgeable enough to be one of your top advisors. Whether you are facilitating a giant merger or selling your company, there's a lot at stake besides your finances. There is the future value of your current investment, financial freedom, integrity, and overall reputation. If you need this kind of assistance, Sandra LaFlamme is a real estate expert with the experience, reputation, and knowledge
qualified to assist you in all your key transactions. Sandra LaFlamme, Real Estate Services with Integrity and Conscience. Contact her today at 888-366-8070. That's Sandra LaFlamme at 888-366-8070.
This is author Kenneth Ede. I'm back on Threshold Radio with Johnny Bluestar, and we're talking about the Bill of Rights. When we left off before the break, we were talking about the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits excessive bail, excessive fines, and cruel and unusual punishment. We were hooked on the cruel and unusual punishment part because I think that's the most current and contemporary issue, isn't it? Don't you think, Johnny?
Yeah. Well, all of it fits into the category of if you do things like making excessive bail or excessive fines and forcing them to be locked up or really penalizing them that way when they don't deserve it, it's another form of abuse.
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, they redefined the, talking about abuse, we were talking about torture, they redefined the definition of torture during the Bush administration. And basically, if it's something that causes such the type of pain that you're losing a limb or you're practically going to die, that's torture. Nothing else. Simulating drowning by waterboarding is not torture. That's all okay.
So I think they should be punished for torturing the law and the intention of the founding fathers.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We should torture them.
And that hasn't happened. Yeah. That hasn't happened. The illegal wars were started by these people. They justified them based on lies, and they have not been prosecuted for it.
I think that one of the great harms that they've done is the mental state of the American people, the kind of anxiety that they feel, and possibly for some, the guilt that they feel that they have to be part of this process of downgrading everything that we've always stood for.
Well, you know, the people that realize that that's happening, yes, but what they do is they tell us that we're not safe. You're not safe. And they, every once in a while, they expose some kind of a plot to blow up a plane or something like that. And they say, see, we saved you. We saved you. So you can go, you know, you can come and go now to on buses and planes and still be safe. But the truth of the matter is they can't keep anyone safe. And what they're doing is hassling us. They're taking away our rights. They're subjecting us to unlawful searches on the grounds that they're trying to keep us safe, which they can't do.
How do you look at the airport phenomena, the kind of groping that occurs there? The taking of pictures, I think they're taking pictures that people with no clothes on. I mean, they're nude,
well,
basically.
Well, pretty soon I think you're going to have to basically take off all your clothes when you go through an airport checkpoint. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be in our lifetime, but I know it's definitely going to come. I don't like it being a frequent traveler. I hate being subjected to searches like that. It's a little more dignifying in Europe than it is in the United States, where you're basically treated as a criminal at every security checkpoint. And I don't like how these will pick out a 5-year-old child and search the child and psychologically torment the child to the point of tears. I don't like any of it.
What's really interesting is that it all emerged because of these people who had box cutters and managed to take down a whole commercial aircraft. That's so surrealistic. And it's almost like I'm thinking that it's almost like a television comedy where these guys are sitting around a table and say, well, how can we get these people to realize to accept continual surveillance when they travel? Oh,
yeah.
Well, we can have some guys with box cutters take down a commercial plane. Oh, that's a great idea. Oh, wow. Let's do that.
I'm not sure if I subscribe to the conspiracy theory about that, but
what is the conspiracy theory about that? That they didn't have box cutters and
No, that the government set up the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, just putting aside the fact that to me it's very doubtful and impossible that the plane itself caused the entire downfall of these buildings in the way that they mm-hmm. fell. But besides that, it was fun discussing it. Let's go to Amendment number 9.
The 9th Amendment reads, "The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people." This is the one that's really hard to figure out. because it doesn't express a particular right or bundle of rights, as most of the Bill of Rights does. But it's important to note that the way the framers of the Constitution were thinking during the Constitutional Conventions is that they didn't want the federal government to be too powerful. States' rights were a big deal. So if there is anything that's the federal government's going to have control over, it has to be specifically enumerated. Now, if there's anything that the Constitution has not recognized, in other words, remember we were talking about these Bill of Rights being not rights they grant us by the government, because that's impossible. The humans are felt to have certain inalienable rights. If there's rights that they haven't constitutionally guaranteed us, then it doesn't mean we don't get them. That's the way I look at it.
I think it's related to the clause in the Declaration that says that men are endowed by the Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So it's kind of ratifying the Constitution.
It's saying that we're not
connecting to the Constitution.
Yeah, it's been used in certain litigation to say, well, this comes in through the Ninth Amendment. And the courts have allowed that argument, but haven't really made any rulings on that. But you can see other rights that the courts have recognized that we have. The ones that you mentioned, life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, are what we're talking about when we talk about the American dream, which is what the show, you know, was all about.
Right.
But there's other rights that the court has said, oh, yeah, the people do have that, such as the right of privacy, which is not mentioned in the Fourth Amendment. But we all have a right of privacy. And if a police search or a government search violates your right of privacy, then they've violated one of your inalienable rights. So this is an example of Ninth Amendment recognizing a right that exists that they haven't said that we have a particular guarantee for.
Well, I think that it's an indication, like I always have said, is the Constitution and the Declaration planted certain seeds, and a lot of those seeds have grown considerably and in terms of expanding the concept of inalienable rights, that there are other mm-hmm. inalienable rights. I mean, right now, I think the biggest question is whether having protection for one's health is an inalienable right.
That is an issue that's on the agenda now in our society.
Well, and how about Amendment 10?
The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. So this is the idea that we were talking about before, about the federal government being a government of enumerated powers. And if it's not spelled out in the Constitution as a specific power of the federal government, then it belongs to the people. And the people are represented in their governments by the states. So the idea of the framers was the states were always supposed to be their own sovereign entities governed by the people that live in them, by their representatives. And the federal government had certain enumerated powers that they spelled out in the Constitution and weren't supposed to become any more powerful than that. But as you can see, Johnny, the federal government has become more powerful than the framers envisioned.
I think this is a form of check and balance, which we can see the dangers of it being this check and balance being sidestepped.
Check and balance is the idea of there's three.
No, I understand. Yeah, yeah, I understand. I understand between the executive, the legislative, the judicial,
and judicial. But this is more of a balance between the state sovereignty and the federal government, which was never supposed to be more important than any of the 50 states. It was supposed to be a federation, basically, of states, a federal government.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying it kind of was a way of restricting the power of the
exactly.
federal government, and so it was a kind of check and balance. It was a balance between the control by the people in a certain way and something that would become sort of a behemoth. Is that it?
Exactly. To make sure that the federal government doesn't get too powerful. If you look at the European experiment, which kind of did it bass-ackwards, you've got all these different states that were always at war with each other and killing each other, and now you've got the European Union. which is a federation of different European states, but each of the states are sovereign. So you can't, unless your particular France or Germany or whatever agrees to something, you can't force it on them. But yet you've got this common federation. There's money control, the euro. And it's, you know, that experiment, people say that some people disagree with me, but that experiment is working out pretty well.
Uh-huh. Well, I think having a balance is good. And I think even the Second Amendment is another type of a balance, that a well-regulated militia, you know, perhaps embedded in state governments, mm-hmm. is necessary for the security of a free state. So that's
enough. It would be good if there was a balance there, yes. But now...
That's gone.
This is Johnny Bluestar. I've worked as a lyricist with Patricia Welch for over 5 years, along with Russian composer Edgar Ahrens, a friend and colleague. Her ability as a singer is simply amazing. She brings a unique and dramatic flair to every song she sings. Over the next few months, we shall be releasing a number of these songs, part of an album called Hadley's Castle. Meanwhile, Patricia has been busy creating a super enjoyable collection of classic standards in an exciting 46-song, 3-CD collection.
Music for Great Entertaining introduces Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia Welch. 3 hours of continuous music. 46 of the all-time classic standards, spanning decades of hit songs. Going to a friend's home for dinner? Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia also makes the perfect hostess gift. This 3-CD compilation is the perfect background music that sets just the right mood for any dinner party.
I'm crazy for feeling so lonely. There was a boy, a very strange, enchanted boy.
To purchase this album, just go to patriciawelch.com/CD. That is patriciawelch.com/CD. You won't be disappointed.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
New Galaxy Enterprises is a media company specializing in wide-ranging content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, commercial advertising, web content, etc. One of our most esteemed providers is illustrator Robert W. Zalo. I work on all my most important projects, like book covers, logos, web design elements, with Robert. As an illustrator, he worked on the Ignatz-nominated comic book, The Expert's Guide to Killing Things That Go Bump in the Night. His skills encompass advertising, magazine illustrations, gaming, comic books, TV production, and scenic painting. His clients include Comcast, Adelphia, Haven Talent, Forceworks, High Octane Theater, Star Creative Advertising. If you wish to contact Robert, go to johnnybluestar.com and let me know. That's johnnybluestar.com for artist illustrator Robert Zalo, an essential component of all the work we do. Maybe he can help you too.
This is author Kenneth Ede. We're back on Threshold Radio with Johnny Blue Star. We've been talking about the Bill of Rights, which were the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. And a lot of people have asked me, because I'm a lawyer through the years, you know, what's this big deal about the Constitution? Why are we always talking about the Constitution? Well, when you get something, when you buy something like a dishwasher or a television set, you get an owner's manual, right? And it's got everything that you need to know in case that appliance goes wrong. Same thing with the United States. These are a set of rules, the Constitution, that was drawn up by the Founding Fathers because they thought that they wouldn't want the United States as a country to become too powerful, to become more powerful than the people who are supposed to run it, more powerful than the states, which are supposed to be sovereign. So this is why the Constitution is so important. And these Bill of Rights gives us guarantees of the rights that we already have as human beings. So remember, Johnny, we talked about each one of them, but I just wanted to sum them up.
Right. Well, thanks very much.
Sure.
Go ahead.
The First Amendment is respecting freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of the press, and freedom of the right of assembly. And all of these rights are very, very important if we're going to have a democracy, because people need to discuss the issues, as we've said. And I think your idea of a platform for people to do that in a social media setting is a great idea, Johnny.
Thank you.
The Second Amendment was talking about a well-regulated militia, but really what it's whittled down to now in the definition is the right to bear arms, which initially was the United States to become into existence bore arms against its leaders, the King of England. And that was the idea that if this happens again, we have the right to bear arms. And these militias are supposed to be established in the states. It doesn't really play out that way in the way the courts interpreted it now. And when I say the court, I mean the Supreme Court, which, you know, Johnny, interprets these the Constitution. And they're the final word on what it means. Right now, it means that we have the right to bear arms to defend ourselves, basically, as citizens.
Right.
And that's quite controversial now. I mean, that's why whenever there's a talk about gun control, there's a talk about it, whether or not it violates the Constitution. The Third Amendment is talking about not having the government quarter soldiers in your house, which would be something we'd be concerned about 250 years ago. I don't think we are now, but I think that we talked about the idea of the military, the United States military, not being in the streets of our states, that the states have the authority to regulate themselves. The Fourth Amendment is a very important amendment, and that's the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures, and only issuing a warrant upon probable cause, which particularly describes the place to be searched and the person or things to be seized. This is an amendment that has been whittled down and diluted by the Supreme Court through the years, and I think that it's something that we have to take very seriously. And this right of privacy that we talked about is something that the courts recognize springs from the Fourth Amendment. And the right of privacy is being violated by surveillance, by basically the United States turning into a police state where they can watch everything you do, where they can look in your emails, kind of like Orwellian concept.
Right.
Now, the Fifth Amendment is the idea that you can't be held to answer for a crime unless you're indicted by a grand jury. And we talked about this being that, you know, basically right now, instead of the idea that the forefathers had, you could indict a ham sandwich, because the grand jury is just a bunch of people who sit and listen to the prosecutor who runs the whole show, and the prosecutor basically tells them what to say. You also have the right not to be tried for the same offense, called double jeopardy. And you have the right not to be compelled to testify against yourself in a criminal case. Very important right. That's what you're talking about, the right to remain silent. Remember all the cop shows you see where they Mirandize you and tell you have the right to remain silent? Well, that comes from the Fifth Amendment.
Right.
The Sixth Amendment is the speedy and public trial and the right of counsel and the right to cross-examine witnesses that are against you. And as you could see in my book that I wrote called A Patriot's Act, when they decided to put suspected terrorists in black ops sites in Guantanamo, they took away their and denied them their right to a speedy and public trial. They denied them their right to counsel, and they denied them the right to cross-examine witnesses against them. Basically denied them many protections, and as I go through it, I'll tell you the other ones that were denied. The Seventh Amendment is the right to trial by jury. And this is a very important right because the Founding Fathers thought that in any crime that you would be accused of, you would have the right to have this trial by jury, and you would sort out whether or not you really committed that crime in front of a group of your peers. Well, we talked about this being something that only people who can afford an attorney now get, and about 97 to 98% of all federal cases never go to trial anymore. So the prosecutor, having so much power, too much power, dictates what's going to happen to you in a federal case. And the Eighth Amendment goes along with that. And basically, we talked before about A Patriot's Act, my book. By treating terrorists the way that they do and throw them in jail off-site, outside of the country, they're also denying them their right to a trial by jury. They're also denying them the guarantee provided by the Eighth Amendment, which is against excessive bail, which we talked about. You know, when you're accused of a crime, the bail is often set so high, nobody can afford it. So this is a dilution of your Eighth Amendment guarantee against excessive fines and against cruel and unusual punishment, which we talked about them violating with the accused terrorists in Guantanamo. The Ninth Amendment says that the enumeration of the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. In other words, like the right of privacy that the court found comes out of the Fourth Amendment, your Fourth Amendment rights, just because they don't say enumerate what your rights are doesn't mean that you don't have them. Remember, we discussed in the very beginning that the idea of these Ten Amendments was that they're guarantees that we would have these rights and not be taken away from us by the federal government. They are not to give us the rights. The rights are inalienable. They are basically something we're born with. They're given by God, so to speak.
Right.
And then finally, the Tenth Amendment, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution are reserved to the states respectively or to the people, which is the idea, again, that we don't want the federal government to become too powerful and too big, which in my opinion it is now. And the real power should be in the people who have more control over their local government, because those are the people that basically they can go in, talk to. This is the idea that we have a representative government, and your state is your local area or your county. And then for your federal government, you have the representative in Congress, which you're supposed to also be able to go and talk to. And he or she is supposed to care about what you think, which I think we've ran into a little problem there too, haven't we, Johnny?
I would say so. I mean, it costs a lot to get to be in a priority position so you can really speak to somebody in Congress.
Yes, and we talked about lobbying, which is basically legalized bribery, which I think we need legislation to reform our campaign system. I think we need legislation to limit term limits, because I think that these people spending too long in the office, they get too powerful, and the special interest groups control them. So there you have it, the Bill of Rights in a nutshell.
Well, thank you very much. I think that we all realize that if we are to retain our concept of ourselves as Americans, we need to also retain what are our foundations of our culture and of our country. And the legal foundations of our country seemingly are being destroyed or undermined. And I think that it's very important that we go back and drill down on these Ten Amendments. So absolutely the foundations of the American experience. Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Johnny.
The following is from West Side Warrior, the memoir of Ray Boylan, a Korean War veteran and crime fighter. He was there fighting in the world's coldest battlefield when the Chinese communists invaded.
Desperate squad members ran past our foxhole yelling, "Get the hell out of here! There's too many of them!" Again, we saw the Chinese soldiers charge again with opium-induced mindlessness, oblivious of our bullets. Again, we heard the bugles and whistles. Climbing out of our foxhole, Bob dropped two hand grenades behind us, and I threw one over my shoulder. Bullets whizzing by our heads, Bob and I became bolts of lightning flashing across the mountainside. Like a hideous film, desperate scenes like this played out on the Tokong Pass for 3 days. Sometimes I played in the scene. Sometimes I could only watch and wonder if it were real, or if I'd be suddenly jolted out of my trance by an RKO usher saying, "Hey, did you kids sneak in here?"
To acquire this book, Google westsidewarrior.boylan.kindle. Boylan is spelled B-O-Y-L-A-N. That's West Side Warrior, Boylan, Kindle.
I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Arin for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had 2 seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season. I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com. One of the reasons I like working with Ken Eade is that he is a fighter for liberty and an advocate for the return of our constitutional rights. As a writer myself, interested both in real social problems and writing about them, but also working in a fictional genre in novels and screenplays, I sympathize with Ken Eade's understanding that communicating with the American people cannot just be with the kind of logic, discussion, and analysis which I believe was well deployed in this program. Discussing at length the Bill of Rights. Yes, intellectual and legal outreach to American minds is important, but we must also reach out to their emotions. And I think, given both the work that he and I have done, I am totally committed to creating a kind of dual outreach in my work and to validate and promote the work that Ken Eade has done in his novels. One of these novels that directly deals with several of the Bill of Rights is A Patriot's Eye, which handles the subject of torture and deprivation of legal rights to a naturalized American citizen who was falsely accused of terrorism. In the story, Ahmed Khoury, who was born in Iraq, goes to Baghdad to help his brother and is subjected to a brutality that mirrors the actual abuse suffered by so many prisoners accused of terrorism, but who are subjected to brutal interrogation while illegally detained without adequate counsel or the possibility of a speedy or fair trial. Here is an audio excerpt from Kenny's legal thriller, A Patriot's Act. It is not a fun excerpt, but it demonstrates the power of Ken's writing, but also the reality of what we are doing to lower the bar on human rights and willing to subject our own citizens to cruelty and a lack of justice that our Constitution was formulated to prevent. In this episode, after a mock execution, Ahmed wakes up in total darkness.
Chapter 3. Ahmed opened his eyes to complete blackness.
Am I alive?
Panicking, he put his hand in front of his face and he couldn't see it. He moved his fingers. Still nothing. Ahmed's frantic eyes moved back and forth, and there was not a sliver of light.
I'm blind, he thought.
A sudden surge of adrenaline compelled him to action. His brain sent a signal to stand up, and as he did, the pain shot from his feet to his head like a hammer hit on a high striker in a carnival. Gravity pulled his broken body to his knees, and he collapsed. He felt his body. No clothing.
What happened? Am I dead?
No, he thought.
I must be alive.
He was in too much pain to be dead. He felt his chest for bullet wounds, but found none. Except for some tender spots on his chest and back and some scrapes on his knees. There was nothing. They must have used rubber bullets. Ahmed strained to see, but it was no use. He felt his face. It was swollen and bruised. They must have blinded me in the shooting, he thought. As his other four senses came to life, he realized that he was sore all over. He tried to stand again, but his legs would not cooperate. He felt them with his new eyes. The bones felt straight and unbroken. Must be sprains, but why am I blind? He struggled to control the panic and the terror. Think, think, have to think. Ahmed crawled on his hands and knees and propped himself up against the wall, which was as cold and damp as the floor. He felt along the walled boundaries of his confinement. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7 feet in one direction. 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 feet in the other direction. Next, he negotiated the circumference on his hands and knees. How did he get himself into this mess? From his cozy home in Santa Barbara to the battered and occupied Baghdad to this. His brother Sabine needed his help, so he went. It was as simple as that. The next events were a blur to him. The raid, his capture. Now he was in some kind of military prison. Since his capture, Ahmed had been stripped naked, cavity searched, shaved, bald, beaten, kicked, and spat on. And then the mock execution. It made his current confinement in this dark cage somewhat of a relief, not at all what it was designed for. The walls were as cold as a headstone. He felt around them until he came to a steel door. He thought of his wife, Catherine. She must know he was missing by now. But even if he was to be rescued, what good is a blind husband? An accountant by trade, there was no way he could work with figures as a blind man. He would be a complete burden on the entire family. The best thing to do is to kill myself, he thought. He had some life insurance, and wondered if it would pay off in the event of his suicide. The time passed, but Ahmed had no way of measuring it. How long have I been like this? Ahmed concentrated on his other senses, but there was no input save the sound of the pounding of his own heart. His mouth was as dry as a slab of jerky, so he tried to wet his broken lips with his tongue. In despair, he dropped to the floor. Lying there on his back, he rubbed his eyes, and suddenly, he saw tiny stars above him in the blackness. Light! I can see light! The tiny stars spread out in a geometric pattern like symbols in a matrix. This can't be stars. They're not random. Ahmed's accountant's brain analyzed the patterns of light, but then they turned into eyes, angrily staring at him. Stop! Stop! Please! Somebody help me! Then the eyes pulled back to reveal a miniature firing squad with their rifles trained on Ahmed. He heard the blast of the rifles, almost in slow motion, and felt the bullets ripping through his flesh as his brain switched off.
A special thanks to Zave Nathan and Bonnie Blazak for their song, Living in the Closet. You can find more of their music at SoundCloud/Zave Music. That's SoundCloud/Zave Music. Thanks to Patricia Welch for a performance of a portion of Desperate Games written by Edgar Ahrens and myself. Check out her CD at patriciawelch.com/CD. That's Patricia Welch, WELCH, patriciawelch.com/CD. And finally, thanks to the great Hassan Khan for his extraordinary work. We are going to go out now with a fabulous song by Patty Greer. The attacks to our rights in our country we are experiencing are going on all over the planet Earth. Not only attacks to what we might call our human rights, but also another inalienable right, the right to a clean, safe, and livable environment. Patty Greer is a filmmaker specializing in the chronicling of critical information about crop circles. New films are on the way. Visit her website at pattygreer.net. That's Patty Greer, G-R-E-E-R, pattygreer.net. We go out with her song, a wonderful song, We Want Our Planet Back.
Waking up, and the animals are strong. Nature needs rebounding, so we're wishing on the stars. I'm just a kid at heart, and that is where we start. Who's in charge here?
Who's in charge here?
Let's do it differently. It's sickening all the people, and it's killing all the trees. It's falling in our eyes, and it's getting harder to see. Beauty that is our world, and the freedom to be free.
We have free energy.